And good morning and welcome to another Talking Money. This is Certified Financial Planner Mike Miller, your host for today. And we've had an interesting week to follow, to precede this program today. And last week, we were looking at a market that had gone up pretty good. And we were all feeling great that, okay, maybe the bottom had found itself and we're going to be heading back. But then this week hit, and more volatility and an interesting, especially interesting day on Thursday when the market was up down nearly 800 points and then ended up down only 70 some points. So there was a 700 point gain that day. We just didn't feel it because, of course, it went down first before it went up. But never fear, I had a special hot off the press brochure that came to a little flyer that came to me in the mail just yesterday. It's entitled Money Magnets. A flood of cash is about to pour into the market. Here's where it will go and how you can get there first. All right. So this is it's about a 30-page document or something. It's going to tell me all the different things I need to do. And of course, they're not doing anything, but you can get a lifetime of growth investor, which is what they're trying to sell for only $199. Regularly $1,990, 75% savings. What a deal. Well, I can tell you that, they don't know any better than anybody else. And so you can spend that money and maybe you can get at least a different idea of what's going on. But I certainly wouldn't, try to make your whole plans based on all this. I think that there's no one that knows these kind of statistics. And I'm afraid the marketing people take over for sanity sometimes, because this was Louis Navalier with Growth Investor, and I use a lot of his comments during the week, and he does a great job, but his own mutual funds don't do that kind of thing. I mean, they just, it's all the hype. And unfortunately, and I've seen several people that I've written over or read over the years that have moved and gone to some other big marketing outfit. And all of a sudden, it taints everything. The marketing that you see coming from them has their name on it. But I know because I read them for 15 years that that's not the way they think. That's not the way they act. But the marketing people, once they buy them out, I guess they just have that authority then to do things. So we just want to be careful with all those kind of things. So anything you get in the mail, that, and even though it may give great advice, at least this one was more positive. It said, here's what's going to happen. Here's where you can put your money. Most of them are panic selling, trying to just put fear into you that says, this is always going to be that way. We've got some interesting statistics and things to share with you later on today that maybe will encourage you. I've been through these kinds of volatility periods before. The biggest one back in 2008, and the end of 2008, first of 2009, when the market in our, what we famously call now the Great Recession, and what I was telling people back then, and we'll talk about the same things now. It almost feels like it again. Those of us who went through that, you start to think, wow, you see those huge numbers when the Dow dropped so much. But relative to what the price is now, the Dow versus what it was back then, it's just not as big a deal. It just feels like it. It just feels like things are not going so well. On the positive side this week, we did the Treasury bond. This is kind of a positive and a negative. So the 10-year Treasury bond, which is the rate that I share most of the time on Talking Money, was down 14 basis points. All right, so it was 2.99 and went down to 2.85. Now you got to remember when interest rates drop like that, your current bond holdings, which have been struggling this year, should rebound. So there should be an increase in price because when the yield goes down, it didn't go down because the bonds started paying less. Now new bonds would, but it went down because the price went down, so the interest rate went up simply because the price went down. So somebody bought a new bond or a used bond, let's say, that was already out of the market, but they paid less for it. But the dividend, the interest rate is the same. The interest rate yield is going to go up. So that's where, when you've got a balanced portfolio, And many of our portfolios only have 30, 40, 50% in the stock market. And even then, it's not all large U.S. stocks. There's many other things in international. I haven't seen the report for this week to see international did, but some of the general reports were indicating that at least yesterday, international held its own. We'll get the final numbers on Monday or sometime over the week, over the weekend. But the, so the bond part should help offset some of the downturn in the market. It's not going to offset all of it because the market went down enough this week not to have it make up for all of it, but at least it's going to be a good shot at it. So this last week, the S&P was down 4.6%. Then if you look at the quarterly performance for the S&P was down 8.51. So half of the performance, roughly less than half the down performance for the last quarter came just last week. So, but when it goes down fast, and I've seen this for I guess I should say decades, but at least for years, when the market goes down, it tends to go down quickly. And then it takes a while for it to go back up. You don't see the same types of upticks in the market that many in a row that you typically see when the market is going down. So that's what always feels worse. People panic. It starts getting, people start getting and bailing out faster than they should. And that's what causes the kind of the exponential effect it's a natural reaction to more people trying to sell. Yesterday also, the trading was a little lighter. So when you have lighter trading and the market went down like it did, well, that means fewer people really realize those losses. So if you have fewer people trading and the price goes down, but you have fewer people that actually sold at that price, that means, okay, it's a paper loss, but they haven't actually realized that loss yet. And that's what you need to, that's why this long-term investing is so important and to keep a long-term perspective, because it's easy to look. And I heard an annuity salesman talking last week and say, now the market went down 10%, his own investments in a fund that he's not allowed to touch, it went down 10% as well. Well, that was probably from the peak. I don't think it's down 10% for this year. It's down the red, but it's not 10% for this calendar year yet. But it's the hype. It's trying to sell something through fear. And what you end up getting is into an annuity that they sell that has these guarantees. But what they never talk about is those surrender charges that you have in the first 5 to 10 years it's a guaranteed loss. Sure, it's only if you take out your money, but that's the same way it is in the stock market. It's not a loss until you take your money. So how is that different than if I take my money in an annuity, I lose 8% because of this, or 10% or more in the surrender charge? That's a guaranteed loss that first 5 years, 8 years, however long that surrender charge lasts. So keep it, just be careful about overreacting into things that appear to be a better investment or less volatile than the stock market, because they'll also talk about, yeah, but you can make the money when the stock market goes up. Well, the market goes up most years. So the only way you're going to get that 4.5 or whatever cap they have on the top end, the only way you're going to get that much in the annuity is if the market goes up higher than that. So, you know, keep that all in perspective. Some positive things that have happened this week. There was strong hiring. So the unemployment rate just stayed the lowest. It's been the lowest about for the last 50 years. Manufacturing activity picked up. Always like to look at the ISM, U.S. Manufacturing Index, as a non-manufacturing index as well. It rose to 59.3, up from 57.7 in October. Anything above 50 is going to be a positive reading anyway. Some of the weaknesses that we've had, the job growth slowed. We've seen some slower housing because of interest rates going up. A recent report by the Commerce Department showed a steep drop in new orders for U.S. manufacturing goods, so that may be a delayed effect there. The number of Americans that were filing for jobless benefits, that fell, but it fell by less than was expected. But at least it did fall. And now we're getting also to we have a slight inversion. So we've talked about inverting the yield curve. We had a slight inversion this week when the 2-year treasury got just a little ahead of the 10-year treasury. But those are somewhat positive news when you think of the Fed and what they use to determine whether or not they're going to continue to raise the Fed funds rate. And in fact, then, and by default, short-term interest rates, they're less likely to do that when things like that happen, because they're part of the reason there's an inverted yield curve, is because they're the ones that cause short-term interest rates to go up. All right, so we got a lot of other information about that, but what I've been talking about on the promos I've been giving this week is, you know, that when you have Mike Tyson says, you know, everybody's got a long-range plan. Everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the face, and then it changes. So how much is this downturn of the market feeling like a punch in the face to you, and how should you react to that, and how should you make sure that you stay on track for your plan? So we'll talk about that when we get back from the break. 877-235-9405 is our text line, our phone line. If you got a question for me about something related to money, this would be the number to call. 877-235-9405. We'll be right back with more of Talking Money in just a couple of minutes. Thank you for listening to Talking Money today. When I co-founded Plan First over 30 years ago, my goal was to establish a financial planning firm that acted as a true fiduciary for its clients. I think we have the best team of credentialed and experienced team of advisors. Our team has helped hundreds of people navigate through the many transitions of life. We don't just give lip service to helping clients with estate planning, tax planning, retirement income planning, or social security strategies. We love to solve problems. Now, my wife will be the first to tell you that I don't like spending money on something I think I can do myself. I know many of you are the same way. That's one of the reasons you listen to Talking Money, so you can plan better on your own. But when you're ready to think about turning that responsibility over to someone else, give us a call. It doesn't cost anything to check us out. So if you'd like to find out more, give me a call at 800-588-7526 or send me an email to info@planfirst.com. Now let me give you that phone number one more time. 1-800-588-7526. I look forward to speaking with you soon. Now back to more Talking Money. And we're about 19 after the hour here on Talking Money. This is Mike Miller, your host for today. Got a money question? 877-235-9405 is the text line and phone line. We're happy to take those questions today. We're talking about the market, because since we had such some increased volatility, I'd planned on talking a little bit about how to survive volatility already. But we may end up talking about that the whole show today. But I do want to get to either today or next week the thoughts about some year-end tax planning and things like that I think you need to be paying attention to and can help save you a lot of money, especially as it relates to mutual funds that are paying their last year-end distributions and so forth, which a lot of them will pay toward the end of this month. But right now we're talking about volatility. So there's an interesting article in Barron's a week ago that was entitled, "Don't Panic, Meditate, How to Survive Volatility." And Darren Fonda is one that wrote the article. But the article starts off, "When fear grips the market, it's good business for Denise Scholl, a Wall Street performance coach with a background in neuroscience." So Scholl helps investors delve into the emotions underlying their decisions. So her phone's been ringing a lot lately. So a portfolio manager, this is what gets me. So it's a portfolio manager. This is somebody who runs stocks all the time in Asia, wanted to figure out what he should do with his frustration. She says he was asking, should I react to this market action or stick with my long-term conviction? Well, my answer back to him would probably be do something different. If you're a portfolio manager and have to talk to a performance coach about that question, then I think there's some other serious issue. And later in the article, but neuroscientists and behavioral economists argue that biases are hardwired into our brains and personalities. Some of us are overconfident, taking excessive risks. Others too meek, seeking to avoid losses at the first sign of trouble. So everybody's different and everybody's wired differently. So it's really, you need to understand that before you decide how you're going to invest your money. Don't wait until there's some kind of a panic and then decide whether or not you think you can take it or you can't take it. Try the best you can with your own experiences not doing that, or you work with a firm that can help you keep from doing that. So the article later says, what neuroscience has confirmed is that it's impossible to make a choice without emotions. And that says Michael Ervolini, CEO of Cabot Investment Technology. That's a Boston-based firm that sells behavioral finance software to institutional clients. Interesting, the software has annualized more than $3 trillion in client portfolios. Wow. In 80% of the cases, it has found at least one persistent behavioral tendency that costs the portfolio more than one percentage point annually in returns relative to what it would have earned optimally. So, and I think optimally typically means leaving it alone and not reacting to the short-term volatility in the market. Some mistakes, he says, arise from the tendency to feel pain from a loss more than acutely the pleasure from a gain. And we've talked about that many, many times. It's like twice as much that you feel the pain from the loss than you feel the pleasure from a gain. Investors sell too quickly when holdings take a few hits. They hold winners too long, they also say, because they overvalue them. And I've seen that happen many, many times. And I've seen it actually happen where they hold losers. Somebody holds a loser too long. I've shared years ago with you about a client who came in and they were holding some stock from Lucent, which many of you had never even heard of at this point because it's gone now. But Lucent, and she'd had this stock. And at one time, it was worth $60,000, and it was now worth about $5,000. And she said that she was planning on holding it, and she wanted it to go back up to help make up for some of the loss that she endured, even though $60,000 was not what she paid for it. I think she paid more like $25,000 for it, but now it still was worth a lot less than what she had paid for it originally, and she wanted to keep it. And so I asked her that question. I said, well, what if you didn't have that Lucent stock and you were trying to find a new investment to buy, would you consider Lucent stock? And she said, oh, no, you kidding? I wouldn't buy that loser for anything. Why not? Well, because I really don't have that much confidence that it's going to go up. Well, then why are you holding on to it? So people hold on to those losers as well as they do their winners too long. They hold their winners too long. Well, I guess in this case, she did that because it went up and she could have sold it when it went up. She kept holding it all the way down to where it was worth less than what she paid for it originally. So she did both. She held on to it too long as a winner, and then she held on to it too long as a winner, as a loser. And then, so advisors like doctors can't help anyone unless they accept good medicine, they say. That's where psychometric software can play a role. Syntonic, a startup near Los Angeles, sells an online tool to help advisors psychologically profile clients. An investor would see an image. This is interesting, I think. An investor sees an image of a Fijian tribesman, whatever that is, pointing a spear at a charging wild boar and be asked to rate the tribesman on a scale from very likely to be peaceful to very likely to be aggressive. Well, now to me, that doesn't really make a good point about stocks. I mean, this tribesman is pointing a spear at a charging wild boar. What do you think he's going to be? Of course he has to be aggressive. So I don't know how that changes your perception of risk. Anyway, that's one of the ones I use, but I guess that's some psychologist or psychoanalyst came up with that one. Then it says, while investors might think panic selling is rampant when the Dow tumbles 800 points in one day, for instance, only 0.35% of outstanding U.S. equity shares trade on an average day, and even on a volatile one, just 0.6% change hands, notes Jason Voss, a former portfolio manager and author of The Intuitive Investor. Rather than be swayed by big market moves, Voss says, investors should take a timeout between the stimulus and response, even if just to meditate for 15 minutes, something he recommends. So that's where the article title came in. Just don't panic. Meditate. Think about this before you do it. And of course, some people, you meditate for 15 minutes, the market's down even further than it was before you started meditating, and your panic starts all over again. So I shouldn't have done any meditating for 15 minutes. I should have acted on it. Then he says, Schechter shows worried clients that trading is often counterproductive. From 1995 to 2015, he points out investors earn about half of the market's return on average due to greed and fear, he says, or buying high and selling low. Nonetheless, this may be an opportune time to trim equity risk. The economy is in the late stages of recovery. So then when they say that, I mean, they're making sense up to that point, and they say, well, this is an opportunity to trim equity risk. Well, no, you should have trimmed equity risk, like they said earlier in the article, when things were high. You say you held onto it too high. Well, wait till it goes up and have some up days. Even if you did it like last Friday and Monday when the market went up those couple of days before it started going down, that was a good time to start backing off. But to me, you only do that if it's money that you're going to need in, let's say, the next year. I've got some interesting quotes here from Jim Cramer on CNBC that we'll look at after the break. But it's just fascinating how some of these people, I guess because it's what sells on the TV and gets people to get advertisers to want to invest in it and advertise on those shows because it's getting people that watch. Maybe they like the way he pushes buttons and makes his sound effects and rants and raves. And that's why we always call him Jim Cramer, not Cramer. So anyway, and I've got some history with him going back to 2008 from some comments he made. So the article then says, however you invest, he advises, realize that most of the market signals, technical moves, trading patterns, and the like are just statistical noise. People yearn for an explanation for stuff that's often impossible to explain. Hear, hear. Amen to that. What you think is a pattern in the market, in other words, may be as random as seeing Abe Lincoln in a cloud. So I won't pick on my wife for that. She sees things in the clouds that I never see. But it's your imagination. It's how you see things. And because people want to see things, then they think, okay, that must be the way it is. And they end up panicking for something that they shouldn't be panicking on. So when we get back from the break, then we're going to talk about the learning from the mistakes made by legendary investors. So Michael Batnick wrote an article, on behavioral finance. This was just in October. So he talks about the mistakes made by legendary investors. So these are people that you've heard of, Warren Buffett and the like, and mistakes that they've made, and how you can learn from some of their mistakes. And it's funny how people will look at those legendary investors and think that they always make the right moves, just like some of these golfers think they always make a great shot. Well, they don't always make a great shot. They're just able to recover, and they don't panic from the bad shots that they make, so they can recover well and then start to take advantage of the downturns instead of being overcome by those downturns, which is what you really want to do. So we've got several mistakes that they made that we want you to make sure that you don't make from those same mistakes. And then we're going to get to some information from Gary Alexander and some others, just to give you some historical perspective on where the markets are. And then we'll try to wrap up with some information about the current downturn in oil prices and gas prices and things that pretty much everyone has seen when they go to the gas station and pay less for gas. 877-235-9405. You can text me a question if you're not brave enough to give me a call. If you give me a call, we'd love to have you on the air. 877-235-9405. We'll be back with the rest of Talking Money in just a few minutes. Since I started hosting Talking Money over 11 years ago, I've had the privilege of speaking with many listeners, many of who are now clients of Plan First. Some folks came because they wanted to be sure their spouse had someone they could rely on if they died first. And it's not only a surviving wife that needs help, even though that is what many people assume when they hear that statement. Over the last year, we have helped several surviving husbands navigate the transition of losing a spouse. What a great feeling of satisfaction to our team when we can help a surviving spouse. It's the same satisfaction we get after spending time helping clients do year-end tax planning or simply helping them figure out the best Social Security claiming strategy. One of our advisors shared with me how emotional one of our clients got when we helped him plan for his retirement. I think he had a peace of mind that he didn't have when we started the process. Now that's a great reason for us to do what we do. Of course, we're not the right fit for everyone, but we may be just the right fit for you. And there's no fee to check us out. Let's start with a phone call and see if it makes sense to go further. Go to planfirst.com and review the page that shows the Plan First team and give one of them a call if you find one that you'd like to speak with, or just give me a call. The phone number for Plan First is 1-800-588-7526. Once again, that number, 1-800-588-7526. And welcome back to Talking Money. This is Mike Miller, your host for today. 877-235-9405 is our phone line, text line. Feel free to give us a call. We'll try to answer those financial questions you may have. It's a nice, gloomy, rainy, cold day. We're now expecting to have some freezing rain and maybe some snow tomorrow in the upstate. And those listening up in Asheville and that surrounding area are expected to get a lot more than we are here in the upstate. So it's just time to hunker down. And, of course, you've probably already got your bread and milk and all that good stuff. And I think the key is keeping the power. So they're talking about a lot of people losing power this weekend. But that's just a guess, and they're taking it from the amount of ice that they expect to get and how that typically affects power lines and how many people might lose the power. So I'm totally fine with the snow and sleet and whatever, as long as I'm already home and hasn't started by the time I've finished talking money and we get back. I do have my oldest daughter flying in from Colorado tonight, so we want to make sure she makes it in safely. And then it looks like, based on the last weather report I saw, it's not going to be a problem for that, but you know, the weather can be like the stock market sometimes. I laughed when I saw one of the articles in the Greenville News on Thursday, and it just said something about the upcoming snow and says, what can we expect? And then it started to give the predictions on what they expect to happen. Well, I don't know about you, but I remember a lot of times when they predicted different things that happened, they were predicting, 4, 6, 8 inches, and we didn't get anything. It's like, okay, well, so I guess they know about as much about what's going to happen in the weather and probably still more so than we know what's going to happen in the stock market, because so many variables that come into play when you're talking about the investment in things like the stock market. But this one article that was talking about the learning from the mistakes from legendary investors. And so there was article was written, Big Mistakes, The Best Investors and Their Worst Investments, that was published earlier this year. He wanted to shine a light on something people have too little appreciation for, how hard investing is. It's really hard for all of us. I highlight some of the stumbles made by John Bogle, Benjamin Graham, and Mark Twain, among others. So kind of interesting. So I'll just go back to the ones he mentioned. It says, 10 Common Investing Mistakes. See if you relate to any of these. So investors tend to expect the future to look like the recent past. When stocks are going up, we expect them to continue, and the opposite is true. I've talked about that many times on Talking Money. We just tend to think, okay, look, how bad the stock market's been the last couple months, I just feel like that's going to continue. And I've seen the same thing with stock markets is going down and going up. When it's going up, they think, well, it's going to keep going up. When it's going down, they think, oh, no, it's going to keep going down. And neither one happens. Not forever. Now, the period, like I said earlier in the show today, the downturns typically seem to come a lot faster and get over much quicker than the upturns. So you might have 2 or 3 years upturns, and then you have 2 months or something of when the market goes down. It typically doesn't lose everything that earned for those several years. It may lose what it earned most recently, like the last 6 or 12 months, like what's happened here this year. But don't ever think that just what's happened, either good or bad, in the recent past is what the future is going to look like. Number two, investors behave as if the price we paid for security somehow should be factored into how we view the investment going forward. So he says stocks don't care that you hope to achieve 20% return the next 6, 12 months. Sir John Templeton said the four most dangerous words in investing are, turn my page, it's different this time. Haven't we heard that before? I think that's the most dangerous words in investing are, I'll sell when I get back to even. I kind of referred to that with the example I talked to you about, the client who had the Lucent. So I'll sell when I get back to even. Well, you got to look at it. I think my editorial on this is, if you were buying it new, would you buy it? Is it something you would buy? And if it's not, then you would buy something else that you feel like has a stronger chance of going up. So then he quotes David Einhorn, what do you call a stock that's down 90%? He says a stock that was down 80% and then it got cut in half. So, so it was down 80, now it's down 90. So it at least gained back some of its loss. All right, investors mistake number three. Investors make the mistake of thinking about the stock instead of the business. And this is where at Plan First, the managers that we look at, and not all of them do it this way, but most of them, they're looking at the business. They're trying to decide, is this business a good business to buy? Where a lot of investors are just looking at the stock. They'll look at the trend. They'll see, they'll maybe read what some analysts said about the prospect for that particular stock. But the good analysts are going behind the scenes, behind the curtains, under the covers, and they're talking to these companies trying to find out what is really up with that company. And they don't take for face value everything that that company said, that because obviously the company's going to put a positive slant on their own. So they'll talk to people like suppliers and vendors. They'll find out more from them about that company than they necessarily might find out from the company and the CEO and some of those investment people themselves. So look at that as a business. Number four, people loathe to admit that they were wrong about anything. And this is particularly true with investing. Most people would rather hope they're right than admit they're wrong. The best way to prevent large losses, to take small losses. And just you never know. And that kind of is a rule with investing in general, because people will say, when the market's down, like in 2008, when it's down 20%, 25%, ends up being down 35 or 40% on the S&P 500, you know, why didn't you get out when it was down 15 so we wouldn't be down 40? Well, nobody knew it was going to keep going from 15 to 20 to 25 to 40, and it goes fairly quickly. So if you panic and get out at those times, well, who knows that 10%, 15% was all it was going to go down, and now it's going to go back up. So that's why we recommend all the time, you don't keep all of your money in the stock market. Now, if you're younger and you can stand the volatility and you're looking for maximum growth, then yeah, maybe keep it all in the market. But even then, I would say we'll keep some out of the market so that those times when the market does take a dip, you have cash reserves available that you can buy into those dips. But that would be the reason you keep that cash on the side. But for most of us, you just don't put everything in the stock market. Put the money in the stock market that you anticipate not needing for at least 3 years and probably 5 to 10 years. And that's your long-term in money. And expect it to go down like it's been going down lately. Just expect it. If you expect it, you don't panic. I mean, I haven't touched my own personal stocks to say, well, I want to get out. No. I mean, I sometimes don't even look at them. I know they're down. But I know it's good, solid, fundamental investments, and I'm leaving with good managers who know what they're doing, know how to pick stocks, and I let them worry about the day-to-day issues on that, and I'm looking more at the long term. So number five, people often look to others for approval. So it says confirmation bias is dangerous for obvious reasons, and when you catch yourself succumbing to it, you should refer back to this quote from Benjamin Graham, "You are neither right nor wrong because the crowd disagrees with you." And so you may feel better if a whole bunch of people agree with you. You're talking to your buddies. You're on the golf course talking to them, and they all agree with something political, something with your investments. You feel better because those people agree with you. But that doesn't mean you're right or wrong just because they agree or disagree with you. Number six, people are overconfident. We all think we're above average, whether it comes to intelligence, driving ability, or the likelihood that we can beat the market. One particularly dangerous way that overconfidence manifests with investors is leading them to believe they can handle more risk than they actually can. It's something I refer to later. You need to understand really what your risk is. And if you're the kind that invests and then once the market goes down X percent, call it 5, 10, 20, whatever it is, especially if you're one that will ride it down till it's down. And those few times that it does that, when it actually goes down 20%, we're not anywhere near that right now. So when you panic when it goes down and you sell then I'm going to tell you, you should have never, if you're that kind, you should have never bought it to begin with, because you just never should have. That's how you're going to lose money, is because you bought it, let it ride up, you let it ride down, and then you sold it. Well, you're better off just not being in there to begin with. So be careful on that. You're not average. Most of us aren't average. Number seven, success in one area of life does not guarantee success in the market. So when experts in one field shift their attention to another field, performance retreats to the novice level. So people think, I've got this PhD, I've got this experience, I'm an engineer, I've got all this training, I can go to investing and repeat the kind of success I had in whatever field I have success in. But it's a completely different field. That doesn't mean you can be good. You still have to start over again and learn your stuff, just like you did from the beginning. All right, I got number 8, 9, and 10, but we'll get to those after the break and then get to some Gary Alexander comments and see how much time we have to get some of these other things in before we have to wrap up talking money. The phone number and text line, 877-235-9405. It's toll-free, 877, and of course the text line is too if that's the kind of plan you have, 877-235-9405. We'll be back with the last segment of Talking Money in just a couple of minutes. Plan First is pleased to sponsor Talking Money, now in its 12th year of broadcasting. With so many financial planning firms to choose from, I am humbled when new clients choose to work with our team at Plan First. What makes Plan First successful is not what the typical advisory firm emphasizes: good portfolio returns, new clients acquired, or the increase in assets under management. Of course, a firm needs to continue growing in order to better serve clients, and Plan First has certainly had great growth in those areas. However, our satisfaction really comes from the opportunities all our advisors have to help guide clients through life's transitions. A tax strategy that works well. A retirement analysis that brings hope to a client that is just plain tired of the day-to-day work routine. Or the surviving spouse who we help navigate the world without their partner. Our clients are the main character in this story, and we are here to walk beside each one of them through their journey. This core purpose of Plan First begins with Andrea and Tracy as they greet you at the front door. As one of our new clients wrote recently to Tracy and Andrea, "Thank you for making me and my wife feel so welcome when we were there a couple of months ago." The journey to Plan First has many paths. For many, their introduction began by attending an educational session taught by one of our advisors. Our advisors spoke at a wide variety of events in 2017, pre-retirement and practical finance classes at Michelin, Women in Manufacturing, and Lunch and Learn at Milliken, the Michelin Benefits Team Offsite Retreat, and the Bob Jones University Advancement Department Seminar on Estate Planning. And we even spoke at the Greenville County Library Staff Training Day. We love to educate, so if you ever need a speaker for your church, civic organization, or at your work, we'll be glad to help. The phone number for Plan First is 800-588-7526, or you can always get more information at planfirst.com. That phone number again, if you want to start the conversation, 800-588-PLAN-7526. Now back to Talking Money. We got about 10 minutes here left in Talking Money. We'll try to wrap up these comments that we can learn from the mistakes made by legendary investors. This is based on a book called Big Mistakes, The Best Investors and Their Worst Investments. So we're trying to learn from some of the best: John Bogle, Benjamin Graham, Mark Twain, Warren Buffett, those kind of people. So we already went through 1 through 7. Number 8 is people think that if they build the perfect model or if they have better information, then they will be able to beat the market. It doesn't work this way because there's only one input that can't be modeled, and it's arguably the one that matters most, and that is how people feel in the future. So investing is much an exercise in psychology as it is accounting. There's too many variables to say I'm going to beat the market. And that's where a lot of people say, well, I'll just invest in the S&P 500. At least I have the market. And unfortunately, there are managers, they may be few, but there are managers that over a longer period have beat the S&P 500. So it's naturally, it can be done. Whether or not they continue to do it in the future, who knows? But we'd like to have some index-based investments, because that way we know we're at least going to match the market, or we'll come close to match the market. We use total market return funds, not just S&P 500. But then we have some other select managers that have consistently beat the market, not all the time, not every year, not every quarter, but over time they've shown that they can do that. So I think it's a good combination. So number 9, talking to friends and family about investing is a mistake. So he says, talking about your investments removes objectivity and adds difficulty to an already difficult task. The only thing worse than losing money is watching your friend lose money because of a recommendation you made. So you got to be careful talking about your friends and families, because that may make you feel confident and make you feel, get some confirmation from other people to say, yeah, we think you're doing a great job and would you do some things for us? But you better be careful, because the last thing you want, because if you recommend something to a family member or a good friend and things go down, they may not have the same long-term perspective that you do, that you're able to keep watching. And sometimes you're going to recommend something that goes down, just doesn't go back up. That happens. That's life. That's why you should invest with a good, effectively diversified portfolio. The last one, intelligence is not enough. So humility is much more important to obtaining satisfactory results than intelligence is. The Wall Street Journal's Jason Swigg put it best when he said, people are humble before nature. Think about what you stand when you stand on the rim of the Grand Canyon, or you walk up to the edge of an ocean, or you look up at the stars. People feel this sense of awe and wonder and smallness, because we are small when we compare ourselves to the natural world. And I would put a little excerpt in here that says, if you ever have an opportunity to go to the Creation Museum up in Kentucky near Cincinnati, If you ever have a chance to go there, go to the planetarium showing, and you're going to see how small we really are. When they take you out, zoom you out like a long, long, long way and show where Earth is compared to the universe. And we're definitely a small part of everything. But even in our own natural world, we're small. So, well, individuals and for that matter, policymakers are small when we compare ourselves with the financial markets. But most of us forget that. And we think, oh, we have better data or we know something the other guy doesn't. When in fact, we should have that same sense of just being a speck of sand on a long beach and just remember that whatever we know is very small compared to the totality of the information that's out there. This doesn't mean you need to invest all of your money in index funds and not do anything else. So I agreed with that. His conclusion of the article, investing is hard. Mistakes will be made. When considering whether you would like to try your hand at beating the market, consider financier Bernard Baruch's observation. Quote, if you are ready to give up everything else and study the whole history and background of the market and all the principal companies whose stocks are on the board as carefully as a medical student studies anatomy, if you can do all that, and in addition, you have the cool nerves of a gambler, the sixth sense of a clairvoyant, and the courage of a lion, you have a ghost of a chance. So that kind of puts the rest of us like, okay, well, I think that's the, maybe it's harder than what many of us would like to admit that it really is. And so that's where I think diversification helps at, and using managers that do spend all their time doing this, and many of them, none of them are clairvoyant. So we can throw that one right out the window, because no matter who it is, they're not clairvoyant. So just be careful when you get these newsletters, announcements. You hear somebody on TV, whether it's Jim Cramer or not, that they don't know anything. They don't know either. So Jerry Boyer, who's been on this program a number of times, and I called him again about, hey, can you call and give me some comments about the China tariffs and about oil prices and things like that? He said, nope, I'm not going to do it. And he said, we'll talk in general about how you should strategize and how you should allocate and so forth. But nobody knows really what's going to happen to those things. So why should we even talk about it? The people who do talk about it really don't know. They're just making a good guess. So I thought that was an interesting comment that he made. So Gary Alexander wrote in his blog, this is on Monday, so this is before this downturn this week. He quoted Jim Cramer. This is a Jim Cramer comment that he made on November 26th, so not that long ago. He says, I have, quote, I have a tremendous contempt for this market. It cuts your heart out. It's very hard to be very positive about the market unless you're an idiot. So that was what he made on November 26th, 2018. So it's last week ago, Monday, I think that was. If you can keep your head, another quote, if you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs, yours is the day and everything that's in it. That was Rudyard Kipling that said that. So last Monday, so that's when it was. So almost 2 weeks ago, Jim Cramer, he seemed to lose it. And he said that, I have a tremendous contempt for this market because every time you try to make money in it, it cuts your heart out. That's a bear market, he says. The classic definition of a bear market, Gary says, is a 20% retreat from the previous peak in a major market index. The classic definition of a correction is 10%. All right, so he says Cramer's math is a little different. He says, Cramer says, who cares about the S&P? It's individual stocks that are down 40 or 50%, unquote. Well, of course, yeah, some stocks are down 50%. But if some of those stocks are down 50%, then other stocks have to be flat or even rising. It's just math when you look at the indexes. So you can obsess with that one that's down 50% or the one that's up 5%. That's why you have indexes. You have some of each in there. So Cramer kept his emotions at red alert level, saying, quote, people come in and get their heads cut off. I feel ashamed. It's very hard to be very positive about the market unless you're an idiot. That's what we quoted a little bit earlier. Isn't that interesting? So he says, call me an idiot, Gary says, because I don't trade every day, every week, every month, and I don't watch hyperventilating or emotional gurus who push buttons on the air an hour or more a day. But fast action seems to be what viewers want. Entertainment value lures more eyeballs, and that's what advertisers will support. So in the following, and of course, the following week, so this is last week, that the Dow and NASDAQ both rose over 5%. Because that doesn't mean he's wrong, but that certainly that first week he was. And now this week he looks like he's right. But you got to also look at the bigger picture, not counting this week that the stock market S&P 500 is up 30%. since Donald Trump was elected. That didn't get it this year. It got it the year before. But still, if you invested a couple years ago, you still have that gain. So you can lose some of your gain, but that doesn't mean you've lost money. You've got to look at what you have in the market. And that's, and always keep that perspective. So then he says later, using the S&P 500, since this bull market began almost 10 years ago, there have been six corrections of 10% or more. There's really been eight corrections of 9.8% or more. So we also came close to a 20% bear market trigger in 2011 with a 19.4% decline in the S&P 500. And then get this, in each of these cases, the proper response was to buy stocks, not panic. So by what logic would Mr. Cramer or anyone else say that the proper strategy in the seven previous instances, in these previous seven instances, is no longer the proper strategy today? To argue this case, you need to point to a situation of deteriorating fundamentals, such as higher P.E. ratios. No, that's not happening. Falling earnings. Nope. A looming recession. Nope, not even close. Or significantly higher inflation, interest rates, or taxes. Nope, nope, nada, Gary Alexander says. So the underlying fundamentals don't support that the market's going to keep going down. That doesn't mean there's not going to be something else that makes it stay down and makes it go down even further. But where prices are now, they're even at a better price than they were when this article was written, because he says due to rising earnings and flat prices so far in 2018, growth stocks now cost 17.7 times forward earnings. Value stocks cost an average of 13 times forward earnings, which means value stocks, which we lean toward in our firm, value stocks have a higher potential. They're a better value than growth stocks. So growth stock PEs are far below their bubble levels of 40 plus. Go back to 2000, that PE average was 40. So it's much different than it was back then. So that's why we're not expecting to see those kind of continuing drops and the continuing difficulty. There again, we don't know how long it's going to happen. When it might start going back up, confident that it will, just like it was back in 08. Nobody knows. Stay diversified. You want to keep your money in something that's other than just the stock market. Keep that money that's in long-term investments in stocks or real estate as long-term. And don't panic when you expect the kind of volatility we're having now. Don't worry about it. You have enough other money that you don't have to sell when things are down. Well, hope that information helps you weather the storm that we're having not the ice storm, but the stock market storm. We'll be back with talking about some taxes next week on the next Talking Money.